I've told this story before, but it's such a groovy story. Once I took LSD with Alan Watts and his wife. And we had a very groovy time together, and he started to talk, and he talked steadily for 8.5 hours. And at first, I got very bugged, and I kept saying things to myself like, doesn't he think anybody else knows anything? What does he think? Jano and I would look at each other with great discomfort. Isn't he ever going to shut up? We know he's smart, but does he have to be that smart? And then it dawned on all of us that he was the most exquisite mouthpiece any of us had ever had, and that he was just speaking all of our thoughts, because every time you'd have another thought, his thing would change. He was just this silver-tongued mouth that was enunciating all of who we were. And then I was just awed. I never had a mouth like that. I mean, see, in Paul's letter to the Romans, they talk about Christ's body and all of the parts of Christ's body. It's only when you live at the next frequency up, where you are in the here and now, where we all are all the time, see, always here, then you do your thing on the physical plane, because you're in a human body and you must preserve and maintain it, because it is the exquisite vehicle that is going to allow you to become totally liberated in one lifetime. And you honor it and cherish it and protect it. And it does its thing because it is in nature and it is lawful. And if you can quiet down enough, you can hear what its thing is instead of thinking about, well, I wonder what its thing is. Because its thing is a function of your heredity, your environment, your opportunities, all of the possibilities around you at every moment. That's what your thing turns out to be. But you can only hear what your thing is when you've stopped identifying with your thing. I am, my thing happens. I'm not a speaker. I'm not a teacher. I'm not a holy man. I'm not a guy with a beard. This is all the way it is. This is all nature. And I'm just watching this very far out movie. And is it far out? Wow. Dig what they're doing. I mean, so real, you can almost... you laugh. See, as part of sadhana, you get so that you do mantra all the time, and then you're doing mantra and you go to sleep at night and you come into dreamland, astral dreams, and you just dream along and you're doing mantra. You're doing all Monday Padme, and you're dreaming of whatever your trips are, your karmic things you got to work out. You're dreaming of, I don't know what, all your uncooked seeds, love, protection, sex, power, whatever it is. And you're dreaming the dreams, and you're sitting there watching them, like, wow, isn't that a far-out dream? You all have been in the place, you know, when your alarm goes off and you haven't quite given up the dream yet, but you got to get up. And you sort of hold on to the dream and keep awake because you know you'd better not go back to sleep. That's that place. Well, you get so you can do it for hours. And you go, oh, wow, dig that dream. I think I'll change that one. See? And you pretty soon you start to change all the dreams, make them all holy. You start to get rid of old models in the astral plane and put in new models there too. And then finally you decide you've had enough dreaming and you get up. Now what? Well, dreaming is over. Now comes reality? No, it's just a new trip. Brushing the teeth. Going to the toilet. Eating the food. Saying good morning. Good morning. Wow, look at that one. Mantra going on. On and on the dream goes. Driving to work. Who's driving to work? Driving to work is, I am here. I am now. You don't go anywhere.
And at first, when this starts to happen, it kind of freaks you. You feel you've been gypped, hyped, lost all the fun out of life, huh? I mean, man, nothing's happening. I first got into that plane consciously. I'd been in it a number of times, but I first experienced the horror of it, the horror of here and nowness, which is very far out, the concept of the horror of here and nowness, when I took STP. And I got into a place where nothing was happening and nothing ever was going to happen again. And I said, nothing's ever going to happen again. It's all going by like a set of movies, still pictures. I am doing it all, but there is no me to do it. Total involvement and total non-attachment. And that place, that horror place, is part of the dark night of the soul. It's part of the place, it is the place between where you have died and you have, and before you have yet started to taste of eternity. Because what you have yet to fathom at that moment, in the here and now, it all is. All of it. Everything you were ever reaching for is already here now. And it's all enough, and you already are it. You don't just have it in the sense of subject-object. You are it. And in order to be it, all you had to do was to give up the way of seeing the universe that keeps everything out there, which is the way you do when you think about things, or know them through your senses. Behind your senses, behind your thinking mind, I am. The waking up, the purification, takes place through everything you do once you have started to identify with that being inside you who is not connected with any of your drama. Then everything you do is done, quote, consciously, and everything you do wakes you up further. See, many of us have the model. We'll turn on, get high, then we're conscious, then it's over, we come down, then we're back in thing again. But the fact is that the going up and the coming down and the back in the thing or the being high, all is part of the process once you have developed the perceptual frame of reference of here and now. Just watching it all go down, watching it all happen around you. See, it sounds ominous to say, finally, there is nothing else to do but work on yourself. The other way of saying it is, there's no way to slip and fall, really. Because everything you do is going to keep waking you up. Everything you do. That's what Meister Eckhart was saying. When you finally dig who you are and how it's all to be, and the seed is planted clearly and fully, then every single thing you do is part of your sadhana, your spiritual work. Every single thing. I can't take time off even if I tried. And so your whole life becomes something else. Instead of living in order to groove, in order to get enough, in order to make it nice. Everything becomes part of extricating yourself from one level of consciousness and living in another level of consciousness. And in this other level of consciousness, we carry wood and we carry water and we chop wood. Before Satori, when you're in the gross plane and you're completely caught in your rational mind, you're going around doing your thing. And then you wake up. And then a waked up being takes care of his body, does his thing, does his dance in life. There is no external measure by which we will know of the consciousness of a human being. There is no external manifestation that is in one-to-one correspondence with sheer being, because being is reflected in every breath, in every act, at every moment. Now, once you understand all of this, then you say, well, out of all the things I'm going to do, how can I do the things that will get me out of these habits of thought fastest, most quickly? That is karmically determined that you'd ask the question. See, I mean, you don't think you have free choice like that. That doesn't work. The story I told last night, I really dig the story. I've told it here, I think, before, of the little boys in Central Park. And they're taunting this little kid. And they chase him up a tree, and he says, he's crying, and he says, I'm making you chase me up this tree. And they say, no, you're not, and they get very angry. And he says, I'm making you say, no, you're not. And they say, no, you're not. And he says, I'm making you say that too. And they get furious. Finally, they say, let's leave the crybaby. And they start to walk away from him, and he says, he's up in the tree, he says, I'm making you walk away. And he says, in fact, everything you do for the rest of your life, I'm making you do. The only way a society finds its way back into the Tao, into the harmony of the universe, is by a change in the level of the consciousness of the participants in that society. The greatest thing you and I can do for ourselves and for our fellow man is to work on our own consciousness. It's a simple rule of the game, because we only teach by our own being. It's all we have the option to do, really. Then every act we perform will either increase man's enlightenment, man's light, or it will increase the darkness. And you can stand up. There are more ministers who stand up and profane the words of truth, love, harmony, beauty, because they themselves know nothing of peace, love, truth, harmony, and beauty, and therefore they are performing immoral acts in the sense of they are performing acts which are increasing the darkness. And that's part of why you and I have such a hard time realizing that what's happening to us is that we are coming into the spirit because of the profanation of religions in the West. So we say we're getting high. And then finally, who do you want to hang out with? You want to hang out with high beings. You hang out with Buddha, with Christ, Ramakrishna, Ramana Maharshi. Man, they're stone heads. They see how it all is. You start to live in the here and now. They live in the here and now. They're all right here now. Had you but eyes. Okay, finally you ask the question, how can I speed up the process and so on, and then you start to look for methods to purify. In the succeeding 2 weeks we're here, I guess I feel sequential, although probably you'll all be different next week. That part of us which is that will be different, I don't know. We'll talk about methods. Meditation, bhajan, kirtan, pranayama, drugs, living life, karma yoga, Sufi dancing. The two things that Tenny and I did before, one of them was from Yogananda, and the other was courtesy of Sufi St. Louis.
I'm here.
I know you're here. That's why I said it. We probably did it wrong, too, because I've never met you. We're all here. Where are we going to go? I'm here, too. It's all here, and it's all enough. One matter of explaining about these scenes. The reason we're doing all this stuff, these lecture series, and I'm doing 3.5 months of 60 of these, and it's either going to get me high or break me, I'll tell you. Everything that brings me down, I got to keep doing till I get higher from it than I, right? Okay. When I was in the temple in India, in dark India, it was so far out what was happening to me, I started writing notes, collecting. And then I got a message from the teacher which said, the guru sent his ashirvad for your book. And I said, what book could that be? And he said, whatever book it is you're doing. Now I had no plan to do a book ever again. And I came back to this country and I thought, well, the guru said to do a book, I'm supposed to do a book. So I sat down, I typed the book. And I sent it to all these publishers and they all turned it down. So I said, well, obviously that couldn't be the book, because Maharaji would never let them turn it down if it was the book that it was supposed to be. I mean, either he is who he is or he isn't. That's the way I live, see? So I figured, well, I'm sure what he has in mind, he'll let me know when it's supposed to happen. So I went around the country giving darshans, and there were a lot of tapes made by Big Sur Recording Company and people in the East Coast, and lots of other people. Pretty soon there are more tape recorders than people. And then a lovely woman in New York asked if she could type up all the tapes. She typed a huge pile of tapes. And then this fellow up and down, Big Sur, went through the tapes and he said, you know, there's something very interesting that the tapes are like at two levels. Sometimes you're talking along and you're just like a heavy professor teaching. And there's ego all over it. And then at some point, when something happens with you in the audience, you turn on and then it all comes out like iambic pentameter. And he says, it's not you speaking at all. And he says, you know, if we took just those parts, you know, we could make a book. So that wasn't going to be my book anymore. See? It always used to freak me when people say, I'm a medium. See? The voice speaks through me. But I guess that's the way it is. I guess, I don't know. Maybe it's just a super, super hype. At any rate, I don't know who's speaking through me, but stuff comes out. So we've taken all these high parts and cut them up, and we put them together in a little book, which reads like the Tao. Then people said, yeah, but what about all that stuff about how to meditate and how to do pranayama and asanas and Sufi dancing and how to do meditations? Well, we'll put in little booklets. Part of the book will be that. Then a lot of people said, couldn't we have some holy pictures to hang up around our puja tables? You know, it's those groovy Indian pictures of Krishna and Ram, and how about Christ and Gandhi and, you know. Okay, well, we'll put those in. Well, everybody said, well, we will need two copies because we don't like to tear them out of the book. Could you put an extra set in the back? So, okay, we'll put those in. So the thing has been, you know, like, and then somebody said, gee, you've got a groovy idea about how to die. Would you put a manual? Okay, we'll put a manual. You need a straight lecture people can hand to their parents and say, you know, here's a straight lecture. This tells you. All right, we'll put that in, see. So this thing, and then a lot of people say, well, can we draw pictures for, oh, sure, you know, they have lots of pictures, so. And then lots of people wanted to work on it, and Steve Durkee down in New Mexico said, you know, couldn't we do the whole thing with rubber type so we could hand print it? Sure, we ought to do that, of course. So then you can't find a publisher that's going to publish a thing like this, because... Furthermore, somebody said, you know, everybody doesn't like all the parts of the book. Why don't you just have them all separate and put them in a box? Then people can take the parts they like, see? Okay, so we'll do that. So now what we've created is a box, which has in it all this stuff, see? And we've decided to publish it ourselves, meaning us. So in order to do this, I mean, I've never been, we're buying, you know, it's to make 20,000 copies of this, you got to buy a carload of paper. That's a far out thing just in itself. So we've started this whole business, and it's all being done by us, the spiritual beings. Two ex-priests have a printing company in Albuquerque. You know, I mean, it's all like that. Dick Baker and his wife from the Zen Center are hunting for the paper, the tatami paper in Japan that we're going to use for part of the book and so on. And people in India are sending us prints, and people in New York are helping, and the whole scene is very collaborative. It's going to cost $30,000. So I was going to go and ask rich people. And then I dug that rich people are all hooked on their money, and it always gets into a thing, you know. I'll give it to you. You know, and giving and receiving is very tricky. Because most people that have money can't use it that freely. Because they're too attached to, their egos are too tight. So it finally seemed the logical thing to do, to go out and raise it from the people who are seeking to know. So we've worked out a scene now, so that you paid Bread to come here. All the money you paid goes for this book. We are going to print 20,000 copies of this book, and then we feel the book should be available to you. Now, if we can raise enough Bread through this tour that I'm doing, which is to New York and Boston and Montreal and everywhere, then we will give the book away. Because after all, it should come to the people that want it. If we can't raise enough, then we'll have to sell it for a buck or something like that. Now, what we have, but unfortunately we don't have them tonight, because we forgot them, is we have thousands of postcards, which you can take one and you can fill it out and send it in, and when the book is ready, you will be advised that the book is ready, and if you want it, you can have it. Because you paid for it. Doesn't all that sound true? However, we forgot the postcards. Okay. However, I'll give you two choices. One is that you can just put a note with your name and address in the mailbox to, it's very simple, Lama, L-A-M-A, Box 444, San Cristobal, New Mexico. You can do that. Or you can come next week and get a postcard. You don't even have to come in. You just come up to the door and get a postcard. Lama Box 444, San Cristobal, New Mexico. This time tonight, I'm going to end with a quote that I've read before from Meher Baba. And then I'm going to sing Ram for a while. And those of you that would like to sing along, do kirtan with us, you're welcome to do so. And as you want to leave, leave. But keep in mind what Hakuin said, your going out and returning is nowhere but where you are. We're all here. We're all always here. Love has to spring spontaneously from within. It is in no way amenable to any form of inner or outer force. Love and coercion can never go together. But though love cannot be forced on anyone, it can be awakened in him through love itself. Love is essentially self-communicative. Those who do not have it catch it from those who have it. True love is unconquerable and irresistible. And it goes on gathering power and spreading itself until eventually it transforms everyone whom it touches. In India, when we meet and part, we say to one another that which reminds us about who we really are. We say namaste, which says, I honor the Atman within you. I honor the place in you where you are God, where you are love, where we are one. The word is namaste. Namaste.
Namaste.